Well, the leading pastor says we must look at Israel today, including the lives of Israelis and Palestinians, for prophetic lessons for all of us.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, I continue to be amazed, saddened, grieved as I read people posting on Facebook and elsewhere on social media, and they're upset that there's so many Palestinians dying and not enough Israelis dying to make it even and fair. Boy, oh boy, the skewed moral equivalency is mind-boggling. Michael Brown, welcome to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. As I've said repeatedly, every loss of life, especially civilian life, is tragic. And Arab blood is just as precious as Jewish blood. But once more, the ones to blame in the conflict, the ones who are responsible for the civilian casualties, the ones who are responsible for instigating the conflict, the ones who have been spending hundreds of millions of dollars digging tunnels underground so as they could have ways to secretly invade Israel and kill and kidnap and maim. That's all Hamas, and they remain responsible. And an interesting report that I'm just looking at now says that in Gaza Strip, support for Hamas dwindles. Perhaps the people are realizing, as much as they may hate the Israelis, that the Hamas government is not in their best interest. Before I speak with Pastor Ray Bentley about his book, The Holy Land Key, I also want to discuss some other breaking news from Israel on this thoroughly Jewish Thursday. There's outrage over reports that the IDF, the Israel Defense Forces, have shelled a UN school where people were refugees were gathered together, and according to the UN, they specifically told Israel, here are the coordinates, make sure you don't touch this building. And according to these reports, earlier today, at least 17 people, including children, were killed and over 200 injured. It's a terrible report. It's a tragic report. You think about the fact that you've got children and others gathered there and now dead. They're trying to run from the conflict and they're killed. It's tragic. It's heartbreaking beyond words for everyone touched by it. I can't imagine the trauma in the midst of it as well. Israel is looking into this, investigating it. But what we are hearing so far, we know for a fact that Israel did not intentionally target the hospital to kill women and children, refugees hiding there from the war. We can be 100% sure of that, that nowhere in the military would that command be given to do that. However, there are reports of heavy rocket fire from Hamas against Israel from there, and it's possible that in the return of fire that there could have been a mortar shell or something that misfired and that hit the school. So a tragic accident, one that Israel absolutely would want to prevent. But when you are being shot at and attacked and you are trying to defend yourself and Hamas terrorists are shooting from next to a school or a hospital, as they have been doing, the alternatives are none, basically. However, it's also reported that it could well be a Hamas rocket that went astray that crashed into the school. In other words, these could not just be casualties of Hamas using civilians as human shields. These could actually be casualties of a Hamas rocket gone astray. And of course, Israel gets blamed for it. Thorough investigation. In any event, tragic loss of life. What does this all mean? Is there prophetic significance to what's happening in Israel today? We'll talk about it.
want, for fire we plead.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, sometimes I think we swing way too far in one direction or the other. We either are so focused on end time prophecy that we're not looking at things in a practical way. In other words, as we're looking at Israel and the Middle East, we're so focused on, okay, what's happening prophetically? We forget about the tragic loss of life. We forget about the real issues unfolding before us and even implications for our own national security. Then others swing so far the other way. They're just looking at social issues and justice issues and political issues. They forget that there are prophetic issues at stake as well. My guest, Ray Bentley, wants to point us to not just the humanitarian things going on, but the people in Israel, Israelis, Palestinians themselves, how this too is of prophetic significance. Pastor Bentley has written a book, The Holy Land Key, Unlocking End Times Prophecy Through the Lives of God's People in Israel. And Ray is the founding pastor of Maranatha Chapel near San Diego, serving, oh, probably 7,000 or more now. He hosts the daily Maranatha radio program, which is broadcast nationally. And he's been involved in Israel, both with the Nehemiah Project that supports efforts of numerous outreaches and organizations in Israel, which include the Joshua Fund, Nazareth Baptist Church, Hope for Ishmael, Jewish Agency for Israel, American Friends of Ariel. He's also a personal friend of the late mayor of Ariel, Ron Nachman. Ray, it's great to have you on the broadcast today.
Oh, man, Michael, it is wonderful to be with you. You are doing a tremendous job, and I'm very, very blessed to be part of this program.
Well, thank you so much. We've been wanting to coordinate a date for a few months now, finally able to work this out. Just reading your biography there and reading about your involvement in Israel, you really have not taken sides in terms of Israel versus the Palestinians. You seem to care about everyone involved in the conflict right now.
You know, yes, I think as you opened, sometimes, you know, we take whatever our views on end times are, and we end up swinging into a political view that can limit, you know, what our real call is as God's sons and daughters. We don't get to choose who sides. I mean, we have to love everybody. And we have to love the Jewish people. We have to love the Palestinians who are there. And I've had, you know, there was a time I went to Israel. I've been going to Israel since the 80s with Pastor Chuck Smith. And one time the Lord said, hey, you know, son, I want you to get off the bus and you know, be on the tour guides and start meeting real Israelis, both believers, those who are not believers, Palestinians who are believers, the Arabs who are there, and get involved with the people and start loving them and blessing them, and building a relationship and being a light, you know, and God has opened some awesome, tremendous doors and relationships and friendships.
Now, how has that personal perspective affected you? What do you think changed from the normal perspective someone would have going on the tour, seeing the amazing things happening in the land, and the Bible comes to light in living color, that kind of thing? People are always impacted by tours to Israel. But what happened to you because of your personal relationships?
You know, the first person, I wasn't looking really for this. God just brought it to me, and I was introduced through a mutual friend to the mayor of this city called Ariel. It's the largest of, you know, it's the most controversial real estate maybe on the planet.
Yeah, I think so.
In the West Bank. It's the largest city, you know, and I had never been there. So I met Ron Nachman in Rancho Bernardo out here in San Diego, and he said, I am a Jewish mayor, you know. And so, I already knew that I needed to meet Jewish people and bless them. And he believed in God, but he was kind of, you know, not a religious Jew. And we began, he said, we need friendship. We need a relationship, you know, Christians and Jews in this time. And so, you know, I just prayed, and the Lord said, hey, this is the opportunity for you to step into the story and earn the right to be who you are And I did. I earned the right, you know, to be able to share with him as a friend and even go over to Israel and pray, lay hands on him, pray for him through his battle with cancer. Became a friend with his wife as well, Dorit, ate at his home where he, you know, barbecued steaks for us. And, I mean, how many pastors can say, my friend is a mayor in the West Bank, and I've been able to share my love and faith in Jesus, and that because of my love for Jesus, that's why I love you and wanted to get involved in what he is doing.
Now, in doing something like that, in the eyes of Palestinians, haven't you taken sides in a hostile position towards them? Or is there a way that love overcomes that division and reaches out to everyone?
That's a great question, Michael. When we became involved with Ron Nachman, let me begin just right there. He said, look, we, you know, half of our population are Russian Jews, and, you know, they've come from, you know, some of them are just first or second generation. We would like to build a relationship with your community. We started hosting teenagers from the city of Ariel in Israel in our homes, in our families here in San Diego. We'd take them to the zoo and to the beach, and they would even come and visit the church. Kids became friends, you know, and they would follow them. This has been going on for over 10 years. Well, then, it was an opportunity to just love people and through relationship, you know, be ourselves. Well, one year I was in Nazareth, and usually going through Nazareth on a tour, you know, you get off the bus, there's not a lot to see. Jesus was raised there, and this one year we went to what was called the Nazareth Village, and my assistant came to me and said, man, you got to meet this guy named Boutros, which is Arabic for Peter. So I came and met him, and he said, oh, yes, I know you guys. You love Israel. You wave the Jewish flag, and here we are. You come and spend all that money, and you visit the ancient stones of Israel, and you love the modern Jewish people, but you don't visit, you know, the living stones. He said, hey, Ray, I am an Arab. If you read Acts chapter 2, and when Peter preached and it lists all those nationalities that were there, Arabs are listed there. We were there day one when the Holy Spirit fell, and we have always been here. And, you know, we feel cut off from our brothers and sisters. So I was cut to the heart. I said, Boutros, I repent. I'm sorry. I said, I theoretically knew you guys were here, but I've never met one. So I reached across. Instead of shaking his hand, I just reached out and I gave him the biggest, strongest bear hug that I possibly could. And I said, we need to begin a relationship and a friendship. Well, that developed. And then he said, hey, our kids, I consider myself an Arab, Christian, Palestinian, Israeli. I said, excuse me, say that again. And he goes, I am an Arab, Christian, Palestinian, but I'm also an Israeli citizen. Nazareth is in the middle of Israel. He said, we are a minority in a minority in a minority within a minority. And he said, we need help. And he said, we've got a school, the Nazareth Baptist School. He said the Baptists came and kind of got everything started. And he said, but then they said, okay, we've reached you, and now you're on your own. And they left. He goes, we've kind of been trying to reestablish relationships and strengthen, you know. So he said, would it be possible for us to send kids from Nazareth, Jesus' hometown, to your, you know, families? I said, yeah, we're already doing that.
Wow.
With a Jewish city. And he goes, oh, really? Where is that? I said, Ariel. And I cannot describe to you the pained look on his face.
Oh, boy.
And so I said, well, how do you guys, I'd never talked to a Palestinian Arab Israeli believer, and I said, well, how do you guys see things? You know, I see God fulfilling prophecy, bringing Jews back. And he goes, look, we don't, you know, we spiritualize that the kingdom is the whole planet, and let's not go there. He said, we have some very different views on that. We can discuss later. He said, but let's become friends. And he goes, I'm going to need to talk to the parents. When he told the parents that the kids, we sent our kids 1 week in Nazareth and then the second week to Ariel, that was also very, very difficult. But they got the elders together, they prayed, and they said, look, these are our Christian brothers and sisters who are trying to be a light and a witness, you know, and believe what they believe and share with them. So they basically said, okay. And so we've been doing that for some 10 years now. I mean, and it's crazy. It doesn't make any sense. The only way you could do this, that you would unite us, is Jesus. So we have a very personal relationship of investment, you know, in the Jewish, you know, this is the capital of what's called the settlements, although it's actually more than that. It's a city called Ariel. And we also have a relationship with Palestinians. This school, Michael, that they have has 1,000 students in it, the Nazareth Wow. Baptist School. 200 of the students are from the top, some of the leading Muslim families in Nazareth.
Remarkable. And hey, Ray, tell you what, let me just jump in, finish that on the other side. Honestly, I don't know anyone doing what you're doing. And that makes you especially qualified to write this book, The Holy Land Key. Pastor Ray Bentley, we come back. I want Ray to tell me what this book is about, The Holy Land Key.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire. I'm speaking with Pastor Ray Bentley. He leads Maranatha Chapel near San Diego. His new book, The Holy Land Key, Unlocking End Times Prophecy Through the Lives of God's People in Israel. Ray, I really do want to talk about the book and why you wrote it and what the thesis of the book is. Again, the subtitle, Unlocking End Times Prophecy Through the Lives of God's People in Israel. But right before the break, you were mentioning the Nazareth Baptist School that you help work with. You've Yes. got an exchange program with kids coming over from Ariel, Jewish kids from a controversial settlement in what's called the West Bank. They come and stay in the homes of folks in your church, and mm-hmm. you've got folks who are Baptist Palestinians from Nazareth. They come over and spend time with families, and both of them meet with the same thing, which is love. But yeah. you're mentioning the Baptist school also has Muslim kids or kids from Muslim families who go yeah. there. Is that because of the quality of the education?
Yes, exactly. And, you know, Michael, you know, Israel has all these Jewish kids, and they're quite smart. And here's this Nazareth school with Arab kids, and this school of 1,000 students, a private Christian school with Baptist origins, has won awards in the Jewish state of Israel for being one of the best schools in the entire country. And they've been honored, they've been rewarded. These kids go on and become doctors, lawyers. They go to colleges and universities, not only in Israel, but around the world. And the 200, you know, students approximately that are from some of the leading Muslim families, and they tell them, look, we're going to have chapel. We're not going to proselytize where you know, try to coerce someone into believing what we believe, but they said, we're a Christian school, so we're going to talk about, you know, the Bible and obviously Jesus, and they go, no problem. We know Jesus as a prophet. We believe in him. Let them be educated, and it's a phenomenal witness and testimony, and, you know, that's what Boutros Mansour said, that he goes, I was asking the Lord, what do you want someone who is from your hometown, who is an Arab, Palestinian, and a Christian, and Israeli, what do you want me to do? And the Lord said, I want you to minister to the kids. That's where I grew up, and I want you to pour yourself into them. And so they are a tremendous light, and we have supported them financially. In fact, Boutros' daughter is actually going to be coming over here to our church in San Diego for several months, you know, and so it's just a building relationship. And part of the reason I wrote this book is I want to encourage people to embrace both Jews as well as Arabs, let alone Muslims. We can do it right in our own country. God has made our country kind of a mission field. Here in San Diego, we have one of the largest Chaldean populations. There are people that are coming from Iran, from all over the world. And rather than thinking of it, you know, as a Christian politically and, you know, jihad and all of that, I have found that most of these people are dying for, you know, some American hospitality, some real Christian witness. And boy, they just, while they might seem a little bit austere on the outside, once you just, you know, walk up and give them a big hug and smile, then their Eastern, Middle Eastern hospitality comes out. You can make an easy, quick friend. And once you're friends, you can share what you believe. You know, it's not like you have to wrestle with them about sharing. They know, they expect Americans or Christians to share your faith, you know, and it becomes very, very powerful. That's what I want to encourage people to realize.
And give us the 2-minute overview of what the Holy Land key is. When you speak of this key, do you mean the Holy Land is a key or there's a key to the Holy Land?
I believe the key to the Holy Land is the people of the land. And I believe that we are surrounded by, Jewish people. I mean, we live in a country where basically the second largest Jewish population outside of Israel on the planet is right here. Many of you work with Jewish people. You know Jewish people. You have Jewish neighbors. And I think that we need to definitely reach out, bless them, love them, and let them know that because of my faith in Jesus. I told the city of Ariel when the mayor gave me an opportunity to speak, I said, look, you guys know I'm a pastor, so I'm a Christian. I believe in Jesus, who was a Jew. But what you need to understand is I fell in love with all Jewish people through the Jewish face of Jesus. Now, how you see him may be different, but you need to know and understand there's 2.5 billion people like me who love Jews because Jesus was Jewish. And all of a sudden, man, they were coming up and slapping me on the back and laughing, you know, because there's no pretending, there's no hiding. And suddenly, I'm free to be who I am and what I believe. And what you find out is most Jewish people, they don't really know what we believe. They have these preconceived ideas, there's a lot of misnomers. And so relationship is what opens the door. And the same thing with the Arab people, Muslim people. These people in our country, all the headlines, jihad and chopping heads off over in the Middle East, I think the huge back door is the relationships and the opportunities. We are in a ripe mission field. And Michael, one thing that I totally agree with you, part of the purpose of this book, it's not about, you know, who's the Antichrist, what's the number of the beast going to be, and all the things we've talked about for 40 years. I believe the greatest harvest of all time is taking place right now. Dreams and visions are happening throughout the Muslim community. Jewish people are being cornered into, look, even though we have the most powerful military, we have the politics, we're a democracy, we have freedom, we still can't get any good press around the world. And they're being literally cornered into having to look straight up. And they're looking around to say, is there anybody else here who realizes we're in a predicament? We need something spiritual. And it's just an open field opportunity. So that's a big part of why I wrote this book.
Awesome. All right, friends, the name of the book is Holy Land Key, The Holy Land Key, Unlocking End Times Prophecy Through the Lives of God's People in Israel. It's written in a clear, attractive way. It will engage you. It will inform you. It will edify you. The author is Ray Bentley, Bentley. At the beginning of this week, as I reflected on what resources would be best to get out to you, our dear listening audience, I thought of 3 DVDs that we have. We've put them together in a package, saves you about $20 off the retail price. A very important lecture I did at the University of South Florida is Israel an Evil Occupier? What's really happened historically? What are the facts on the ground? What's myth? What's reality? Eye-opening lecture done at the University of South Florida. We tried to get a Palestinian or Muslim to debate. We're unable to, so I gave the lecture and then took live Q&A afterwards. And then a debate I did with a colleague, James Michael Smith, at Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary, on the identity of Israel. Israel in the church, Israel in prophecy, past, present, future, Israel in ethics today. And then another debate on DVD I did with Dr. Don Preston about the promises to Israel. Are they past or are they still future? 3 DVDs, just $25, postage paid. Tremendously helpful teaching tools will clarify so much for you. Call now 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Once more, 1-800-278-9978, or order straight from our website.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yes, yes. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, and I have a terrific guest with me, Pastor Ray Bentley. He leads the multiple thousand-member congregation, Maranatha Chapel, near San Diego. And his book that we've been focusing on is The Holy Land Key, Unlocking End Times Prophecy Through the Lives of God's People in Israel. Ray, so much I want to talk about, and you've also been to Iraq. Obviously, your heart is broken over what's happening there, but I'd love to get some of your perspective on what God's been doing in Iraq in a moment. But back to the city of Ariel and the city of Nazareth. Leaders of Ariel, how do they feel about your, how do they feel about your relationship with the Palestinians in Nazareth? The leaders in Nazareth, how do they, Palestinian leaders in Nazareth, how do they feel about your relationship with Ariel?
That's a great question, Michael. Well, when we, you know, when I told the mayor that we were going to be having kids going to Nazareth, one of the things that I could tell immediately from his eyes was some concern, you know, because Boutros had shared with me back when we first began to engage the Arab families and so forth. He said, well, you realize that this is when there were suicide bombers, and he goes, some of those who are going into Israel and doing some of the bombing and so forth were from the hometown, you know, of Nazareth, which made me very concerned. Like, well, why would you want me to send my kids to your home, you know? And he said, hey, he goes, don't worry. He goes, they're not going to blow up their own home or their own neighborhood. So we kind of, you know, nervously laughed about that. But what happened with Ron Nachman and the other Jewish people in Ariel were they began to think of Christians not in a distant way, but they began to trust us. They said, we know that your heart is about friendship and relationship. And if there are Arab Christians like you, then these are the kinds of people that we want. So on the other hand, with Boutros, you know, his idea of a settler as being a radical, you know, killing Palestinians, grabbing land, and, you know, so forth and so on, as he began to hear our stories about Ron Nachman, his own daughters, and as they get married and their relationships and they're trying to build their lives, on a human level, he began to realize they went from being a caricature on a news, you know, website to real human beings who just have kids, who have grandchildren, who want to live their lives. And so we began to really experience and express love and friendship. You know, it's not easy. I mean, Boutros, my book is about how God is bringing the Jews back, fulfilling prophecy, you know, that this is what God is doing. And he doesn't agree, but he wrote a recommendation. You know, he says, this is a book because I know Pastor Ray Bentley and I know his heart, and this is real. What he's talking about, he's living. And it's not just me. It's really the people in the church, and this is what I want to encourage within the church. I think this is one of the most powerful things that we can do is begin reaching out to Jewish people with love and blessing, reaching out to Arab people or Muslim people with the love of Jesus Christ. And that's what your whole ministry really is about. That's what will bring a revival. That's what will bring cultural revolution, is the living power of the Shekinah glory of God. I mean, we are all mobile carriers of the Spirit of the living God. It's powerful.
It's very powerful, and you've lived it out. You are living it out in one of the most difficult settings imaginable, the deep gulf between Israelis and Palestinians that often exists. When we come back, I want to find out from Pastor Ray Bentley what strikes him most deeply today in terms of prophetic fulfillment taking place in front of our eyes. His book, The Holy Land Key.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Just one more quick update about the tragic deaths that took place in a UNRWA shelter. Israeli Defense Force blog says this: in recent days, Hamas has fired rockets from an area of Beit Hanun where an UNRWA shelter is located. So this is for refugees. Last night, the Israel Defense Forces told the Red Cross to evacuate civilians from the shelter in Beit Hanun between the hours of 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. today. UN and the Red Cross received the message. Hamas prevented civilians from evacuating the area during the window that the IDF gave them. Today, July 24th, Hamas continued firing from Beit Hanun. The IDF responded by targeting the source of the fire. Also today, several rockets launched from Gaza toward Israel fell short and hit Beit Hanun. So if there's Israeli shelling that's involved with these casualties, again, the blame falls on the heads of Hamas. And it's very possible that Hamas rockets caused the damage as well. Tragic loss of life in any case, but let's put the blame where it belongs. My guest, Pastor Ray Bentley, his newest book, The Holy Land Key, Unlocking End Times Prophecy Through the Lives of God's People in Israel. Ray, your book is not a date-setting book, but one that brings to attention what God is doing in history and how prophetic truth is being unfolded in front of our eyes. You've been in Israel many times, working with Israelis and Palestinians for many years, studying the scriptures for many years. What strikes you most as you stand back and look at scripture and look at what's happening in history unfolding in front of our eyes? What strikes you as being the most prophetic, the most eye-opening, that you could sit with someone and say, look at this, look at scripture, look at this? Are you there? Hello, Ray. All right, not sure what just happened there. We'll find out in a moment. Everybody else, I trust that you can hear me. All right, I think we're reconnecting with Ray. Looks like we just lost him there. I knew my question didn't throw him, but let's just try again. Ray, do we have you here on this line?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, not sure what happened there.
But, yeah, I don't know what happened.
All right. Well, we can either attribute it to technical difficulty or to demons, one of the two, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so on a prophetic basis, as things are unfolding in front of your eyes, what strikes you the most?
You know, really, it's what has been happening. I mean, you've talked about this. I think we're on the same page that Jewish people right now, let's say in France, with all the anti-Semitism, they're running, they're fleeing France, they're fleeing South America, they're fleeing from Argentina. Jews making Aliyah, coming back to the land of Israel, even under the circumstances that we find today. And this is exactly what God said would happen through the prophet Ezekiel, chapters 36 through 39, 2,500 years ago. I think it's in chapter 36, 17 times God says, I will bring them back. And what's interesting is there's a two-phase program of God. He said, first I will bring Israel back physically, the dry bones, the vision of the dry bones, coming mm-hmm. back together, connected, a human army of nation. This is the whole house of Israel. That God told, we don't need to guess who it is. God told Ezekiel exactly who it is. And the phrase used in Ezekiel's passage is, this will happen in the latter years and in the latter days. Those are two Hebrew expressions, in the big circumference of that passage. They didn't have chapters and verses. And yes, Gog and Magog will happen in the latter years and latter days, but I also believe that it accompanies God's regathering of his people. And there are only two regatherings of the Jewish people mentioned prophetically. And Isaiah chapter 11, verse 11, says that there will be two times. Twice they will be scattered, twice they will be regathered. The first time they were regathered from one place, Babylon, because of their idolatry. God said, I'll cure you of that after 70 years and bring you back. And so the return from Babylon, the first return of the Jews back to the land, was in preparation for the first coming of the Messiah. He said, then I'll scatter you again, which happened after 70 AD, and the Romans came in, and they were scattered to the four corners of the earth. And then God said in the latter years, latter days, I will regather you back to the land, first physically, and then secondly, I will pour clean water on you and spiritually. And that's what I think is happening right now, Michael. God is pouring out his spirit, and there are, you know, since 1967, when there was the Six-Day War and Jerusalem was regained, that's when the Jesus movement took place, which I'm part of. And inexplicably, at the same time, there were thousands of young Jewish men and women, not unlike yourself, who became believers, but instead of just assimilating into the normal, you know, church or various denominations, some of them said, hey, I'm a Jew. I was raised a Jew. I follow the customs. There is an Israel now. I want to remain a Jew, but I believe in Jesus. And, you know, the modern messianic movement, which I know started much earlier, a century ago, but it really, really took off. And I believe that these, every Jewish person who has the glory of God in them and that Jesus is the Messiah is now growing. It's reached a point in Israel where there are some 15,000, and it's reached critical mass. Now, that doesn't sound like a very big number. But even the Israeli media now is portraying, hey, these kids, you know, they're second, third generation and Israelis. They speak
yep.
Hebrew. They serve in the IDF. They become doctors, lawyers, nurses. They shed their blood. And they, so what? You know, I kind of like the liberal press in Israel because sometimes the Orthodox say they're not Jews, and the press says, why not? So there's some dynamics
right.
happening there. On the other side of the coin, there is unprecedented dreams and visions happening in the entire Arab and Muslim world, everywhere I go, not only in Nazareth, in Jericho, in the West Bank, within Gaza, within Iraq, which where I've been, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Syria, Lebanon, Muslims are having dreams and visions of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're led to a believer or to a church, and they get saved. I mean, there's never been a time... it's unprecedented what's happening right now. It's harvest time. And that is, again, why I appreciate your ministry, because you're trying to get people into the harvest, and that's what we should be doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's ultimately what everything comes down to. Ray, in your book, you asked the question, why are the chosen people so hated? Now, you've talked about God's larger plan and how even through the horrors of anti-Semitism, God has brought Jewish people back to the land. But is there something larger in terms of the question that you ask in your book, The Holy Land Key, why are the chosen people so hated?
Well, there is. I like to tell Christians, because sometimes people hear me speak, and they go, oh, you're always talking about Israel and Jews and the chosen people. I said, hey, read your Bible. We're chosen too, but they were chosen first. And so just because we got chosen second doesn't mean we're less important. There's no second-class sons and daughters of God. We're all equal through Jesus. You know, that's where Jews and Gentiles come together. Everybody goes through Jesus, the Messiah, to be saved. But there's a divine order. And Paul said, I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ, for it is the power of God into salvation to everyone that believes, to the Jew first, and then to the Gentile. And that word is in the Greek, the present continuous. So if the gospel was the power of God 2,000 years ago, it's still the power of God. If it was the power unto salvation, it's still the power unto salvation. If it was the power of salvation unto the Jew first, then I believe there's still a divine order. And because of that, you know, Israel is kind of, you know, most of the world, 7 billion people don't go to church, they don't listen to sermons. But when you point to Israel and say, this is a fulfillment of God's prophetic word, God is calling the Jews back, the kingdom is coming, it's on its way, Jesus is risen and resurrected from the dead, there's signs and miracles confirming that he is alive, the world and the atheists and the globalists that don't believe in God, they get nervous. They don't like that. So they want to, you know, the devil is behind the oppression of, you know, God fulfilling his word. He's resisting what God is doing. But Christians, we who are believers, should be playing a role You know, I love the story of Ruth. In fact, I tell the story of Ruth. You know, you've got Elimelech and Naomi, and they've got these two Moab Gentile daughter-in-laws. And after all the boys die and the father dies, Naomi goes, oh, I'm going to go back to the land. And the two daughters, one, Orpah, cries and says, no, I could never leave you. And then she dries her tears and says, okay, and turns around and goes back to her people and her gods. And interestingly, her name, Orpah, means the back of the neck. It's like she turned her back on Naomi, this widow, and she goes back to Moab and to her God.
Ruth. All right, stay right here. Tell us what Ruth did on the other side of the break and how this is a calling for believers everywhere to have that same spirit of Ruth. My guest, Ray Bentley, his book, The Holy Land Key.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. I'm speaking with Pastor Ray Bentley, talking about his book, The Holy Land Key. If you missed the earlier part of this interview about the fascinating work that he's done both with Jews and Arabs, with Israelis, secular and religious, and Arab Christians and others, phenomenal concept, really living out the gospel. Make sure you go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and click on Latest Audio later today. Also, make sure you click on Latest Articles, some eye-opening moral things happening in our society. You'll want to read that as well. Ray, right before the break, you were talking about Ruth and what she did as a Moabite, as a Gentile woman, in contrast with her sister-in-law who went back to Moab, and how this is somehow a call to all believers today. So tell us about Ruth and how it applies.
Yes. In this story, this beautiful, beloved love story of Ruth and Boaz, you know, here you've got a Moabite. The Moabites were under a curse. She's a Gentile. And somehow, you know, her family, Elimelech and Naomi and her husband, somehow she had fallen in love with the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so I see these two daughter-in-laws whose husbands had died as being two responses of the church toward the Jewish people. You've got Orpah, who turns her back on her Jewish family that she married into. Then you have Ruth. Her name means friend. So Orpah's name means the back of the neck. She turns her back, and much of the church, or a portion of the church, is kind of turning its back on Israel and walking away. I believe the example given in the story is to be like Ruth, whose name means friend. She falls in love, and the reason she's a friend of Naomi is she loves God. And she says, I'm going to leave my family, my people, my idolatry, my gods. I'll go with you. And here is this broken, bitter, you know, widow, Naomi, who finally says, okay, you know, the famous words of Ruth are, entreat me not to leave thee or to return from following thee. Where you go, I will go. Where you live, I will live. Your people are now my people. Your God is my God. And the Lord do so to me and more also, if anything but death part thee from me. So Naomi says, what can I do? Okay, let's go. And she literally takes this broken, heartbroken, bitter woman, Naomi, you know, who says, don't call me Naomi, which means pleasant. Call me Mara, which means bitter. And she walks with her back to the land. Well, that's exactly what the church should be doing today, Michael. I know this is where we're together on this, is that the Jewish people are broken. They've been through, you know, wars and the Holocaust and bitterness and hatred, which the root of it is the devil himself. Mm-hmm. They need friends who will love them and appreciate them. This is Jesus' family. It's like, hey, these are my, you know, physical descendants, brothers and sisters, that I want you to love them and bless them, not curse them, not replace them, you know, not pogrom them, not Holocaust them. If I'm in you, then you need to love and bless them. And so I really believe this is a tremendous opportunity. When the rest of the world is turning its back on Israel, this is the opportunity for followers of Jesus to walk in. You know, somebody described, who is a friend? The day that everybody else walks out on you, the person who walks in the door alone, that's your friend. And this is the opportunity that the church has today with the Jewish people.
And, you know, Ray, it's so heartening to hear these words from you. Of course, I know this is your heart, but to hear you articulate this so clearly and so powerfully. When I came to faith in 1971 as a 16-year-old drug-using Jewish kid, shortly after that, early 72, my dad introduced me to the local rabbi, a new rabbi that had taken over the synagogue where I had been bar mitzvahed a few years earlier. We began to talk. One of the first books he gave me was a book on anti-Semitism in church history, basically saying this disqualifies Jesus from being the Messiah. Look at what his church did. And with a note that I have to this day where he prayed that I would have the courage to stand and follow in the footsteps of my ancestors who were martyred rather than deny the truth of Judaism and follow this false religion. And when Christians understand the tragic history and understand the skepticism that Jews have rightly had towards much of the message from this church and not being able to separate a true believer from a false believer, it's only genuine love, long-term expression of genuine love, genuine friendship from the people of God, from Christians, that can remove that terrible legacy of anti-Semitism in Jesus' name. Yeah. So it's a tremendous message of life, and it burdens me when I see churches and leaders departing from this and questioning it, and all the more is your voice needed at a time like this. Mm. You know, I wanted to talk about things in Iraq. We talked on the phone when you'd come back from there and some extraordinary stories. Maybe we'll talk about that another day. I'm out of time now. But the book, The Holy Land Key, Unlocking End Times Prophecy Through the Lives of God's People in Israel. Pastor Ray Bentley, the author. Hey, thanks so much for joining us on the air today.
My pleasure, Michael. God bless you and keep up the good work, my friend.
All right. Thank you. And we will talk again. All right. Blessing to have Pastor Ray Bentley on the air and to hear his heart for Israelis and for Palestinians alike. There are outcries. In fact, real quick, Joey, let's go to clip number one. There are outcries of a deliberate massacre by Israel. PLO's Hanan Ashrawi describing this on ABC News. This is 4 days back now. Let's play clip number one.
This morning, it's nothing short of a massacre, a deliberate massacre. War crimes committed daily. But now there's a deliberate shelling and bombing and destruction of whole areas, of residential areas. And not only do they shell people's homes and kill them in cold blood, as they're leaving, as they're running away, they're being shelled and bombed and killed. And as if any ambulance tries to get there, to get the people, the ambulances themselves are being shelled, and the medical personnel are being targeted.
You know, it is so unreal when Hamas for years has been targeting Israelis. I don't know how many times Hanan Ashrawi has spoken out against that. As Israelis have been targeted for death, Israeli citizens, civilians, targeted for death by Hamas terrorists. And when Hamas terrorists put their own people at risk by firing at Israelis. And one reason there are as many casualties as there are among the Israeli armies, some of their elite units lost several dozen people now total. The reason for that is because of Israel constantly trying to preserve life, whereas Hamas shoots at Israelis from residential areas to try to kill Israeli soldiers and civilians. And when Israel tries to defend itself and fight back, the civilian casualties are now called war crimes. That's why we must get the truth out. Go to my website, AskDrBrown.org, right on the homepage. Special video offer you want to take advantage of. Go there now, AskDrBrown.org. These videos will greatly help you separate truth from error, biblically and right till today. My bottom line today: let us follow the example of this godly pastor and demonstrate the love of Jesus to Israeli and Palestinian alike. Well, what's the perspective of a Palestinian Christian in the midst of Israel's war with Hamas? We're about to find out firsthand.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Music from the Middle East reminds us that it is thoroughly Jewish Thursday here on the Line of Fire. In a few minutes, we are going to be hearing directly from a Baptist pastor and professor, Palestinian, living in Bethlehem, Reverend Alex Awad, so that we can get a Palestinian perspective and we can interact with, as followers of Jesus, Jew and Palestinian, that we can interact on some very, very difficult issues facing those living in the Middle East today. Before we do that, I want to talk about a few other points of interest. Please remember, in the news, when you hear accounts of the Israeli military targeting civilians, when you hear accounts of the Israeli military intentionally killing children, those reports are false. They are false. And more and more of my colleagues are finding they're interacting with people on social media, and the people on social media, Muslims sympathetic to Hamas and others sympathetic to Hamas, are giving reports as if they're eyewitness reports that end up being false. Are there civilian casualties? Yes. Who's to blame? Hamas, for many, many reasons. But listen to this. End of last hour, I played a clip from Hanan Ashrawi, a PLO spokeswoman. I want to play one more clip, and it is clip number 3. This is from 4 days ago on ABC News. She is accusing Israel of engaging in deliberate massacre. And as I will look into it and find out from the horse's mouth, okay, from the IDF, from their blog, what actually happened, and warnings given, and attempts to let civilians get out, and giving advance notice before they target an area, as Hamas fires upon Israelis. These are they not human beings also when Israelis are being fired on and Hamas is intentionally doing it from residential areas? Are not Israelis human beings also? Are they just supposed to forget about it, let their people be slaughtered? You know, there is there are a couple of funerals for IDF soldiers that had no families, young men that were killed, and they had 20,000 or more attending, 10, 20,000 or higher, attending the funerals, people from Israel coming to mourn because there was no family there to mourn. Let us play clip number 3.
No nation can accept being imprisoned, being besieged by land, by air, by sea, and being starved and deprived of the most basic requirements of a decent life, freedom of movement, clean water. 90% of the water in Gaza is not fit for drinking. They don't have medical supplies. For 7 years, they have been not just under Israeli occupation, but under a brutal and lethal Israeli siege. And then you come in and you shell them and you bomb them and you destroy homes, you destroy whole neighborhoods, you obliterate, annihilate whole families, and then you come and say this is self-defense and no nation on earth will accept having these rockets. No nation on earth can accept to be treated like not just prisoners but helpless, defenseless cannon fodder.
Helpless, defensive cannon fodder. All the policies, all the difficulties because of radical Islamic leadership that is not doing the best for the citizens. Look, Hamas, here's their first talking point. We want the destruction of Israel. That is the problem. We'll be right back.
God of light, hear our cry.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. That means our focus is not just on Israel, but on the Middle East. Last week, I asked some friends of mine if they could recommend some Palestinian Christians that could come on the air with me. I am doing my best to give a fair perspective. I'm a Jewish believer in Jesus. I believe that the modern state of Israel is fulfillment of prophecy. I believe that God has great promises for the surrounding Arab nations and for the Palestinian people. I believe that we must focus on justice for all, and wherever there are issues that must be addressed, we must address them. The guest I had on in the last hour, Pastor Ray Bentley, has been involved working in the city of Ariel, a controversial settlement in Judea Samaria, what others would call the West Bank, and also working with Nazareth Baptist Church and School and reaching out to both to show the love of God. I'm concerned that you, our listeners, get a wide-ranging perspective and hear from folks that may agree with me, may differ with me. And I'm so pleased that Reverend Alex Awad has been able to join us. It's late at night right now in Bethlehem where he lives, but Pastor Awad has pastored the East Jerusalem Baptist Church for many years. He's also a professor at Bethlehem Bible College, born in Jerusalem in 1946, and he's studied in the States. He has degrees from Lee University and Asbury Theological Seminary, among other schools. So highly qualified to give the perspective of Palestinian Christians. Reverend Awad, thanks so much for joining us on The Line of Fire.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Again, I do appreciate you taking your time to join us. And if I could ask you to be as candid as you would like to be, obviously neither one of us want to incite hatred or stir up animosity, but I want you to be as honest and candid as possible. And don't worry about saying anything that might possibly offend me or my listeners. I want to have an honest conversation, if you feel comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Great. First, could you just say from your perspective as a Palestinian Christian what you and I have in common, first and foremost?
Well, we have a common denominator, and that is Jesus Christ, our faith in Christ, our love for him. We have common salvation through the death and resurrection of Jesus. And we are reconciled to God and to each other because of the redemptive work of Jesus Christ on the cross.
Which is the heart and soul of it and is what's going to matter most forever and ever and ever.
Sure, that's the most important thing.
Absolutely. And we need to affirm that and hold to that. Reverend Awad, do you feel that sometimes the evangelical church in America, because there's been strong support for Israel, that often Palestinian Christians are forgotten about or misunderstood?
I wish I could say sometime. I think it is most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Lived in the United States, and I lived in Europe. I visited evangelicals in Latin America, in South Africa, and wherever I go, I see so much misunderstanding of the Palestinians and the Palestinian church in the Holy Land. So it's just huge. It's unimaginable.
All right. Give me some of the things that have grieved you the most in terms of the worst misunderstanding that you run into consistently.
Well, first of all, the average evangelical Christian, he or she sees the Palestinian as the enemy of God. The Palestinian is usually in their mind, he is an Arab, he is a Muslim, and he is an enemy, and he's fanatic. Perhaps there is a dagger in his mouth and ready to kill or rape or something like this. While you know, I mean, they are the bad people, you know. And on the other side, you know, the Israelis are God's chosen people, and if you bless the Jews, God will bless you, and if you don't, God will curse you. We meet this again and again and again and again in many evangelical circles.
Now, is it possible in your mind for someone to say, we believe that God has brought the Jewish people back to the land out of the horrors of the Holocaust and scattering and persecution for centuries, and we believe that God wants us to stand with Israel in terms of having a Jewish homeland, at the same time that someone can say, we are very concerned about the plight of the Palestinians, we are concerned about misunderstanding, and we want to be peacemakers. Do you feel it's possible to do both of those things at the same time?
It's very difficult from my perspective. You know, I mean, I like how you ended the sentence about peace. Yes, we want peace. I want peace for Israelis. I want peace for the Jewish people. I want peace, of course, for my people, the Palestinian people. But it's very difficult for me to look at the history and just say this is an act of God. Like, I cannot look at the Holocaust and say this is an act of God. I can't look at the 1948 Arab-Israeli war and say this is an act of God. I cannot look at 1967 and to say this is an act of God. All of these are atrocities, whether it is the Holocaust, 1948, 1967. So I would not blame God for these bloody atrocities and massacres. Now, the Jews are here. The Jews are in the Holy Land. What I want now is not for them to go back to Europe. I want them to live as good neighbors here with us Palestinians, where they think of us as equal and we think of them as equal. Mm-hmm. Right now, there is a government in Israel that is determined to take over the West Bank and turn it into Greater Israel, leaving no more room for the Palestinians. This is very, very difficult.
All right, so the settlements would be a very big issue to you.
Of course, because the settlers in the West Bank do not want to be part of a future Palestinian state. Mm-hmm. They want to be Israeli citizens in the heart of the West Bank, totally in connection with the state of Israel. They want to pay their taxes to the Israeli government. They want to be Israeli citizens only living in the West Bank. That is hard for any people to accept. Now, mm-hmm. if the Jewish settlers say, hey, why don't we become, you know, citizens of a future Palestinian state, that will change the equation totally. But most of them don't. They don't like Palestinians. They don't want to live with Palestinians. They want to be Israelis, totally Israeli cities and towns in the West Bank that have nothing to do with the future Palestinian entity. That is the difficulty we are facing.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting, and again, if you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with Reverend Alex Awad, who is the pastor of East Jerusalem Baptist Church and a professor at Bethlehem Bible College, and I've asked him to speak freely and not to think twice about potentially offending me or listeners, because I'm asking for his perspective as a Palestinian Christian. Reverend Awad, I'm very conscious of the fact that the Palestinian Authority's Mahmoud Abbas has said plainly on several occasions, fairly recently, that he does not want a single Jew living in a future Palestinian state. That, when you hear that as a Jew, you think of the term Judenrein, the German term, and having to cleanse the land of all Jews, whereas, you know, in the land of Israel proper, that 200,000 Arabs stayed, and they become 1.5 million with great freedoms, and they don't want to be under Hamas or Palestinian Authority. So, you know, it seems that there are always two sides to this conflict, and most of the time we can't even talk about them. But go ahead, back to you.
If Mahmoud Abbas says he doesn't want to see a single Israeli Jew in the Palestinian territory, he is wrong. I'm not here to defend Mahmoud Abbas or Hamas or any of the Palestinian factions. I would like to defend what is just, what is right, and what is acceptable in the sight of God. The Palestinian people, like any other people, they need to have their own state. They can never have their own state with Israeli settlers who want to be citizens of the state of Israel in the heart of their state. That doesn't work. And now the settlers have become strong enough and bold enough to say, we don't want a two-state solution.
All right, tell you what, stay right there, sir. We have a break. We've got plenty of time to talk. I've asked you to speak freely. I appreciate you doing it. Reverend Awad, we come back. I want to ask the question, do you agree with me that the Palestinians are victims of Hamas?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My guest on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, coming live from Bethlehem, Reverend Alex Awad, born in Jerusalem 1946. He has degrees from schools in America, including Lee University and Asbury Theological Seminary, senior pastor of East Jerusalem Baptist Church since 1994, and a professor at Bethlehem Bible College. We are united as followers of Jesus, who will spend eternity together, who've been reconciled to God through the cross, and share a passion for justice for all in the Middle East, but have very different perspectives in different ways in terms of what's happening on the land, which is why I've asked him to come on the air with me. And Reverend Awad, again, there are a lot of issues to talk through, and I want to make sure you feel satisfied that you're able to get your point of view out. But as I've been calling for prayer for the Israelis and for the Palestinians in the midst of the conflict with Hamas, I've said many times that I believe the people of Gaza suffer more under Hamas than anyone. In other words, the Israelis have been steadily attacked by Hamas, and there have been casualties and tragedies, but I feel that the greatest victims of all are the people of Gaza suffering under Hamas. How do you feel about that statement?
Yeah, I mean, to a certain extent, Hamas is an Islamic militant group, and they have an ideology, and I certainly don't agree with their ideology, and I don't agree with their tactics, but Hamas did not come from nowhere. Hamas is the result of years and years of oppression of the Palestinian people. Hamas has been with us only 25 years, but even we have 25 years of oppression before Hamas was born. So, yeah, while I don't agree with Hamas, I don't agree with their tactics, and I know that the policies of Hamas has inflicted suffering on the Palestinian people, but Hamas is a result of the failure of both the Americans and the Israelis in creating a workable peace solution between Israelis and Palestinians. Hamas is a result of the United States government using its veto power, the veto privilege in the United Nations again and again and again, to block any move forward towards a two-state solution and towards a peace in the Middle East. If it wasn't for the United States policy that has been totally pro-Israeli and anti-Palestinian, Israelis and Palestinian people could have peace and coexistence, normal coexistence in the last 25 years. But empowering, the United States empowering one side of the conflict against the other, using its veto power in the United Nations again and again and again to support Israel, whether Israel was right or wrong, this has created Hamas. And now we have created a monster. We don't know what to do with it.
All right. Interesting. My perspective, sir, and by the way, I don't minimize any wrong actions by the Israelis. I don't minimize any suffering on the end of the Palestinians through wrong actions of Israelis. I always say I stand with Israel. That also means confronting Israel where I differ. Just to be clear on that, I think the problem is this. When you say, for example, that you wouldn't defend what Mahmoud Abbas is saying, but he is the government, he's the leadership. When the Mufti of Jerusalem, what, a year or two ago, cites from the Hadith that every Jew must be killed before the final end and the final resurrection, when you have the Hamas leadership doing what it's doing, we see ISIS, we see Hezbollah, we see Taliban, we see Al-Qaeda. That's what we're seeing and hearing, either in terms of the voice of Islam or in terms of the voice of the Palestinian people. And I trace Hamas back to not America, although I understand your point there. America is far from guiltless in terms of its international dealings. But I trace Hamas back to Khawaja Amin al-Husseini, who started intifadas when Jews and Arabs were living side by side in the 1930s. And the Muslim Brotherhood and these other radical groups come out of that. And Khawaja Amin al-Husseini was a confidant of Adolf Hitler. So I hear this constant rhetoric, we want to drive the Jews into the sea, we stand for the destruction of Israel. I see it going back before 1948, the same ideology being put forward, and that's what's birthed this. So from the Israeli viewpoint, when your neighbor wants to destroy you, and their charter says, we want to wipe you out, and when the former leadership, PLO and others, are involved with blowing up men, women, and children, it's not the easiest thing to say, okay, well, I'll just be friendly neighbors. So that's my perspective. That's how I look at it. Back to you.
Yeah, well, since you are going back to history, yeah, I mean, it's always temptation to go to history. But I would say, if you go back to history, we, Palestinian people, have not started this conflict. We are the descendants of all the nations that have been living here for many, many years, the Canaanites, the Jebusites, the Jews, the Crusaders, the Persians, just call them. We are the descendants of all the nationalities, including Arabs and Jews that lived in this country. However, we are not the ones who started this conflict. This conflict started in Europe. This conflict started with a man, when a man called Herzl wrote a book, Der Judenstaat, in about 1890. And when Herzl, in his book, called for the creation of a Jewish state in the Holy Land, when the number of Jews in the Holy Land was less than 5% of the total population. Herzl, of course, was not a religious Jew. He didn't care whether it was going to be the Holy Land or not. But later, Christian Zionists and other Zionists told Herzl, you have to go back to the Holy Land, otherwise we will not support you. And so the Palestinians were asleep when Herzl and other Zionist Christians and Zionist Jews were plotting to come to the Holy Land and create a Jewish state in the Holy Land. This problem has been imposed on the Palestinians. We did not start this whole mess.
All right. I appreciate you sharing that perspective. And I don't want to argue history. And in fact, I don't want to argue. I just want to be fair to if you share a perspective, to answer with a perspective. We've got a lot more time to talk, and I want you, sir, when we come back, to tell me what you'd like Christians in America to hear and to understand. And I'm speaking again with Reverend Alex Awad. He was also involved with the Christ at the Checkpoint Conference, a conference that I had some issues with. Perhaps we can talk about that. But again, my goal is not to be confrontational. And even if some of you listening would like me to go point for point more, that's not my goal, to have a debate. And Reverend Awad is not on the air to have a debate with me. I'm sure he's capable of doing it, but that's not the point. So we will be right back for important resources on my end that will give a greater perspective. Please go to AskDrBrown.org, right on the homepage.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Save the nation.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My guest, friends, on the line of fire today on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, bringing us perspective from Bethlehem, perspective of Palestinians, perspective in particular for Palestinian Christian, Reverend Alex Awad. He is the senior pastor of East Jerusalem Baptist Church, professor of Bethlehem Bible College, and, you know, his history and his pedigree, born in Jerusalem in 1946. Reverend Awad, again, thanks for staying on the air with me. There's much I want to discuss with you. So help me and help our listeners understand something. Absolutely, it's an outrage that there is a caricature of all Arabs, and then specifically all Palestinians, and then somehow even Palestinian Christians, as if you are raving lunatics, all suicide bombers, shouting Allahu Akbar with daggers in your teeth. That's horrific and terrible. The question is, when we see so much radical Islam around the world today, decimating Syria, now threatening Iraq and other nations, we see this, we hear, that's much louder than the voice of a peace-loving Palestinian Christian. The Palestinian people as a whole, let's just say West Bank, Judea, Samaria, where would you put them on that grid in terms of siding with radical Islam or being peace-loving? And how do we overcome these stereotypical images?
Well, you know, I mean, these new movements in Iraq and Syria, and this Islamic State that some Sunni Muslims are building in Syria and in Iraq, I am totally opposed to that. I mean, I'm opposed to radical Islam. I'm opposed to a group of Muslims that want to take us back 1,400 years and start a caliphate and make the Christians a persecuted minority. Of course, we are absolutely against that. Not only we as Palestinian Christians are against that, but believe me, most Muslims in the Palestinian territories, in Jordan, in Lebanon, in Iraq, in Turkey, in many places, are against these fanatical Islamic movement. But here again, the question, how did this movement came about? It came about as a result of American invasion of Iraq. They knocked off Saddam Hussein and got now a group of people who are 100 times worse than Saddam Hussein. You know, American foreign policy in the Middle East have not been wise. And we are, you know, collecting the fruits. We are picking the fruits of very, very poor American foreign policy in the Middle East. These fanatical movements would not be there if it wasn't for the invasion of Iraq and other Arab places.
All right, so while deploring this, you would say that the majority of the Palestinians deplore this as well. You realize that this is...
And neighbors, yes.
Yes, yeah, that's why I've asked you to come on the air and discuss these things. Yet it seems, though, and correct me if I'm wrong, sir. And in fact, this was just a short segment. We've got a longer one when we come back. But let me lay this out, and then we come back. You can correct me if you think I'm wrong. But it feels to me as if there is far more antipathy or hatred or resentment towards Israel than there is towards these radical Islamic groups, even though around the world these radical Islamic groups are killing, sometimes by the day, more Christians than can be imagined. It would seem that the greater solidarity would be to fight against them or to stand against them as opposed to have so much hostility towards Israel. That I don't understand, but I want you to explain that. Again, this is why we're having this dialogue. Reverend Alex Awad joining me from Bethlehem.
It's fire we want, for fire we please. Stand the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
That music reminds us it's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. My goal today is to focus on Palestinian perspective, in particular Palestinian Christian perspective. Hope to continue some dialogue about what can be done for purposes of reconciliation with Reverend Salim Munayer early next week. I'm speaking today with Reverend Alex Awad. I so appreciate him coming on with us now. It's late at night in Bethlehem where he lives. He is the pastor of East Jerusalem Baptist Church and professor at Bethlehem Bible College. So, Reverend Awad, let me give the briefest of perspectives, and then again, I appreciate your candid replies. And I don't want to totally go through history, but just super, super quick. I look at so much of the hardship coming on the Palestinian people as the result of wrong choices by its leadership, refusing a two-state solution in 1947, coming up with three no's against Israel after there was an attempt to destroy Israel in 1967, and then having leadership sworn to the destruction of Israel, refusing to recognize a Jewish state. And then I see radical Islam destroying nations now. And yeah, I believe Americans has made some bad foreign policy decisions over the years. No question about it. We haven't been farsighted enough in many ways. Easier to say that looking back. But my problem from my perspective, and again, I want to get yours, so I'm being totally candid with you. My problem from my perspective, sir, is that it seems that there is more hostility towards the Israelis, whereas I look at it as the Islamic leadership that's been over the Palestinians has done you far more harm than the Israelis. And with better leadership, there could have been peaceful solutions. So that's what I'm having a hard time following.
Well, you know, your analogy is like we are between two fires. We are between the fire of radical Islam and the fire of Zionism. Both fires burn us. Both fires hurt us. So it's not a choice. I don't want the fire of radical Islam, and I don't want the fire of Zionism. I want to live in peace in an independent Palestinian state next to a Jewish state or one state for both people. But right now, the Israelis are systematically taking the West Bank and making it part of Greater Israel. All you have to do is come and visit the West Bank. And you see the scattered Jewish settlements all over the West Bank, taking most of our land, most of our water resources, turning them into only Jewish enclaves. And every year, the Palestinian territories are shrinking and shrinking, and the Jewish territories are increasing and increasing. This is what is hurting us, because we are not seeing any justice. We are seeing our land and our hopes and our aspiration for an independent Palestinian state evaporating. And as long as that happens, I don't think we can have genuine peace with the Israelis. So it is two fires. It's not the fire of Islamic fundamentalism alone that is burning us, but also the fire of radical Zionism that wants everything that belongs to us to belong to a greater Israel.
Mm. Do you feel that the surrounding Arab nations were at fault in passing the resolution 1457, which said that no Palestinian refugees should be taken in? I mean, to this day, there are Palestinian refugee camps in Syria and in Lebanon and in other Arab or Muslim countries, and it seems, again, that Palestinians have been mistreated. You mentioned, quote, radical Zionists, but from what I can see, you've been terribly mistreated by the surrounding Arab nations. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a refugee problem. I mean, there are 800,000 Jews that had to flee from Muslim countries in 1947, 1948, and they were absorbed by the infant state of Israel, and yet the Palestinian refugees were not absorbed by the surrounding states. Do you place any blame on them for their treatment of the refugees?
Sure. I mean, I can put blame on the Arab countries for the treatment of the Palestinians, but that doesn't take the blame from the people who pushed us out of the country in 1948 and destroyed over 420 Palestinian towns and villages and made 800,000 Palestinian refugees. So there are two people in a way I blame. I first blame the people who kicked me out from my home and made me a refugee, because I am a refugee of the 1948 Arab-Israeli war. And of course, my father was killed in the war and my home was taken and we became refugees. And that happened by the Haganah, the underground Jewish militia is what did it to us in West Jerusalem where we live. So the Israelis pushed us out, and now, of course, some Arab countries did not welcome us. They did not put a red carpet for us. Of course, I blame them for also not welcoming us. However, to say that they totally shut their doors, that is not true. Jordan received nearly 500,000 Palestinian refugees in 1948, when Jordan was a very poor country. Jordan did not make us, as Palestinian refugees, go back by force to our homes in Jerusalem and in Israel. Jordan gave us citizenship. Mm-hmm. Jordan was too poor to spread the red carpet for us, but they are not like the people who pushed us out from our country. So it's not an even blame. Lebanon took about 300,000 Palestinian refugees. Because of the demography, and because most of the Palestinian refugees were Muslims, Lebanon did not, which at that time was more or less a Christian state, did not want to tilt the balance towards more Muslims in it. That's why they did not give the Palestinians full citizenship. But at least they did not push the Palestinians back by force into Israel-Palestine. The same happened in Syria. The same happened in Egypt. So the receiving countries, yes, may be blamed for not giving a great welcome to the Palestinians, but they did receive 800,000 Palestinians while Israel pushed these Palestinians out. Then Israel in 1948 secured its borders where any Palestinian man, woman, or child that tried to cross back and go back to his home was shot and killed at the border. That's how the Palestinian refugees stayed in Lebanon, in Syria, in Jordan, in Egypt, in the West Bank, and in the Gaza Strip.
So you don't fault the Arab leadership for refusing a two-state solution in 1947?
Well, you know, 1947, we had different factors. For example, the majority of the people in Palestine in 1947 were Palestinians, not Jews. Palestinian Arabs, not Jews. Also, in 1948, about 89% of the land belonged to the Arab people, not to the Jews. So when the United Nations made the partition, it made the partition that was not fair for us, who were the majority people and who owned most of the land. But the United Nations made this partition out of guilt feeling for the Holocaust. There was a Jewish problem. In Europe, they wanted to solve the Jewish problem, but none of the European countries wanted to solve the Jewish problem in Europe. They preferred to solve the Jewish problem in Palestine. So they drew that map. But for us Palestinians and Arabs, from the first day, we said this is not fair. But nobody listened to us. And consequently, we started being evicted from our country.
Yeah, you know, the thing, again, I wanted to give you freedom to speak. There's so much of the historical narrative that I take issue with. And of course, this has been the Jewish homeland long before there was a concept of it being an Arab homeland. In fact, there was no move for a Palestinian state. It was considered part of greater Syria. There was no Palestinian currency or flag or nationality, but Jews every year praying next year in Jerusalem. and that, Michael, always a Jewish presence.
We have lived as Palestinian Arabs in the Holy Land. We have lived in the country. Some of us from the Canaanite period, some of us from the Persian period, some of us from the Jewish period, some of us from
right,
the
but there, but there are only, but sir, there is, aside from not
my point. Let me finish my point.
Okay, well, tell you what, we got a break. You can finish on the other side. All right, let you finish. I was making a point when you had jumped in, though, actually, but I just want to point out that we're talking about an Arab presence. If we go back to the, 1800s, a quarter of a million Arabs or Muslims living in Palestine. So we're not talking about millions and millions of people. Just to point that out.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
There is so much oppression. There is so much injustice. We have a wall that is surrounding Bethlehem and most of the Palestinian towns and villages. There is an occupation that is taking and stealing away most of our lands.
That is the voice of Reverend Alex Awad. You've been hearing from him over the last hour. He's coming our way live from Bethlehem, pastor of East Jerusalem Baptist Church and professor at Bethlehem Bible College, born in Jerusalem 1946. As he mentioned, sadly, his father died in the war with Israel in the War of Independence in 1948. Reverend Awad, there was a point you wanted to make before the break. I had one more perspective to bring from my point, and then I just wanted you to share your heart with our listeners in terms of what you want them to take away in terms of on behalf of the Palestinian Christians. But we didn't get to finish the point you were making right before the break, so back to you.
Well, my point is simple. We were the majority of the population. We owned most of the land. The United Nations came and, against our wishes, divided our country in not a fair way. So we rejected a bad deal. This is not a big sin to reject a bad deal. However, you know, the 1948 war took place, and nearly 400 Palestinian villages and towns were wiped out. And we became refugees, and we were not allowed to come back to our home. So this is the narrative, the way that we have lived it. I lived it myself because I became a refugee in 1948. I was never allowed to go back to my home. If I tried to go back to my home, I would have been shot and killed at the border. This is exactly happened. The United Nations made a resolution, 194, saying Palestinian refugees have the right to go back to their homes or be compensated. This resolution has never been implemented, and we were never been allowed to go back to our home, and we never been compensated for the losses we lost in 1948.
You know, I don't minimize any of the loss. My problem is knowing the constant efforts that were made to say, let's live in peace side by side, the literature that was given out, the announcements that were made on radio. I mean, this is documented and undeniable. Public statements saying there's room here for both. And then the surrounding Arab nations saying, we're going to drive the Jews in the sea. When that's the posture, we're going to destroy you, we're going to drive you in the sea. And when many Arabs left because the Arab leadership said, get out, we'll drive the Jews in the sea and go back. And then Jews are saying, stay. Look, 200,000 of your colleagues stayed, and there are 1.5 million people now. They're in the Knesset. They're in the Supreme Court in Israel. They don't want to be under the Palestinian Authority. They don't want to be under Hamas. I mean, that does tell me that there's another part of the story. But let me give you my sensitivity, and then I want to close, give you the last few minutes to speak freely once again. Here's my sensitivity. As a Jewish believer in Jesus, I see church history, and I see how often through church history the church has massacred Jews, had said be baptized or die, crusades, inquisitions, European anti-Semitism leading straight to the slaughter of two-thirds of European Jews, including 1.5 million Jewish children. I see the importance of Christian love for Israel undoing some of the horrors of anti-Semitism. I see how even well-meaning words like you've spoken, and given the perspective from Bethlehem, I know Israel put up a security barrier, 97% fence, 3% wall, to keep murderers out. There's been a reduction of 99% of the murderers being kept out. And then I see your words being used by anti-Semites to inflame further hatred of Jews. I mean, I watch it on social media. Hatred of Jews and even Jews back to the oven. That's the sensitivity I carry. At the same time, I want to act in justice and fairness and love towards Palestinians, in particular Palestinian Christians. So that's the challenge, to carry the perspectives we have on our different perspectives of history as well. But, sir, if you take a couple of minutes, tell my listening audience what you want them to know about Palestinian Christians, about Palestinian people. You speak freely. I'm not going to jump in to give another perspective. The last couple of minutes are yours, all right?
Well, I would like to say to the listeners, come and see. Come and see the reality that we are living in. Come with the heart of Christ. Come with the eyes of Christ. Draw near. Draw near and see the reality. As long as you listen to Fox News and other news media that may poison your mind, you will never realize the reality of what we are going through. I do not want to any harm to any Israeli or any Jew. I would love to have it one state solution where Jews and Palestinians live together in peace in one state. But if the Israelis don't want that, I would welcome a two-state solution. Right now, we actually don't know what the Israelis want. They don't want one state. They don't want two-state solution. So what do they want? I really don't understand, because they are making so many settlements in the West Bank that they are killing the possibility of a two-state solution. So we are in a dilemma, especially we, the Palestinian people. Our hopes and our aspirations are being massacred. And we cannot look into the future and see hope. That is in a political sense. In a Christian sense, I believe in Jesus Christ, and I hope in him, and there is salvation in him alone. And because of him, I'm able to look at my Jewish brother or sister and tell them, I love you because of the love of Jesus Christ. I have no hate for the Jewish people. I have learned to forgive them, but at the same time, I feel I'm called by God to be prophetic, say wrong to what is wrong, and say evil to what is evil. And I believe Jewish settlements in the West Bank are the biggest obstacle to peace in the Middle East, and therefore they are evil. And if the Israelis want to make peace with the Palestinians and want to live in peace with the rest of the Arab world, they need to stop their project in the West Bank. I want to have peace. I want my children, grandchildren, to have peace. But right now, with the current Israeli policy, it is impossible to see the light at the end of the tunnel. May God lead Israeli leaders and Palestinian leaders to do justice, to do righteousness, to do peace in the Holy Land. That is my heart's desire.
Well, thank you, Reverend Awad, for sharing candidly, and of course, the closing note that you call for God's guidance for the leadership on both sides for a peaceful, fair solution. My heart is totally with you on that, with whatever differences we may have on other things. We are out of time, sir. I hope to meet you face-to-face one day, but thank you for coming on the air today.
Thank you very much.
All right, friends, you've heard clearly an impassioned Palestinian Christian side. Please go to my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Our resources that we offer there will give my side of this perspective. My bottom line today, I join with Palestinian Christians in praying for the well-being of all in the Middle East.